Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today's Tuesday, July 16th. I'm Stephen Overly. If you're struggling to keep up with the news this week, you are not alone. The Republican National Convention kicked off Monday, and Donald Trump officially picked Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate. Now, that news would have been huge on its own, except that law enforcement is still investigating the attempted assassination of Trump from Saturday. Almost immediately after the shooting, partisan misinformation and conspiracies flooded social media feeds, mine included. And seeing these online tensions flare up led me to call up Chris Krebs. You may know Chris's name because he used to lead the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And even more so, because he was fired by Trump in 2020 for refuting lies about a stolen election. Chris is now the Chief Intelligence and Public Policy Officer at the cybersecurity firm SentinelOne, and he's been tracking the weekend attack and how the internet has responded, from U.S. lawmakers like Vance to Russian operatives. Here's our conversation. Well, Chris, welcome to Politico Tech.
Hey, great to be back.
We're speaking after the assassination attempt over the weekend of former President Donald Trump and the flurry of conspiracy theories and misinformation that have emerged online. I wonder if you could walk us through some of what you're seeing online as this has played out.
Yeah, honestly, there have been four different audiences that I've been keeping an eye on. And, you know, they're not all necessarily consumed in the mis and disinformation space, but they sometimes are consumers or accelerators. So the first group that I'm keeping an eye on, you know, it's senior leaders, it's elected officials, those that make statements about, hey, it's time to take the temperature down, and others that are casting, you know, accusations and causation for what happened and why this individual, this would-be assassin, did what he did. The second group are super spreader space or the influencer space, but also more towards the fringe, not necessarily mainstream. And those are the groups that immediately leapt in following the attempted assassination to fill the information void, where there were not authoritative official voices saying this is what happened. The incentive structures in the online social media space reward these individuals to get out there and make claims, whether they're true or not. They are rewarded for, you know, engagement, for monetization on some platforms. And the flip side of this is that there's not really an accountability mechanism in many of these environments and ecosystems. It's just kind of, hey, you make a mistake or you're not accurate and you just keep moving forward.
Right.
The third group that I'm keeping an eye on is foreign adversaries. So we know that Russia, that China, that Iran, and others have previously been mucking around in U.S. politics, have been sowing discord, which is actually a phrase I hate. I can't believe I just said it. But nonetheless, you know, getting into the middle of existing societal rifts and amplifying the discontent on either side. And they really don't have to work that hard, frankly. And then the fourth and final group that we're keeping an eye on is just us. It's the consumers. It's the average Joes out there that are really subject and swept up in all of this information accelerationism. And it really is kind of disheartening to see with this, the flood of nonsense, everyone getting wrapped up in it. And again, you know, we're lacking real authoritative information.
I'm curious, what is it you hate about the phrase sowing discord?
What does it mean, right? It's something that even back in my days at CISA, I was always trying to move the government towards more plain language. And so what does sow discord mean? It's, you know, causing chaos, creating havoc.
Right.
Making people fight each other. Like, let's use normal words that normal people use.
Well, that speaks to a journalist's heart, so I appreciate that. You mentioned those four groups, and I actually want to dive in a little bit on each of those.
Mm-hmm.
First, though, you know, we see a bit of this after any breaking news event, right, where there's a lot of unanswered questions, and so that void gets filled with speculation and misinformation. But not every breaking news event is an attempted assassination, so the stakes here just feel incredibly high. Can you describe a bit for us what are those stakes and why this kind of event really matters?
Well, I think the obvious first level of concern are follow-on attacks, right? So the assassination attempt itself may have been, we don't know because the investigation is ongoing, may have been really driven by someone that was consuming information and was driven to act. They were driven or inspired somehow to do this. Now, of course, they could just have mental health issues and saw the opportunity. But it's also a possibility that they were driven to act by the existing information environment. There are follow-ons here, though, based on the rhetoric that emanates, that follows on from the assassination attempt. There could be others that say, you know what, we need to get even, or now it's time to fight. We are going to fight back against this person or this group. And that's, I think, the real stakes. That's the concern. Does this further spiral out of control? This is not, frankly, in terms of political violence, the only event
right
in our lifetimes, right? I mean, you can take it back to Giffords, you can take it back to Scalise and the congressional shooting. You can talk about the attempted assassination or against the Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh. You know, there's a trend line here. And of course, January 6th. So these are not isolated events. They are kind of all spinning out of some information ecosystem that's obviously priming individuals to act. So I think that's the real concern. Are there going to be copycats? Is there going to be retribution on the other side? And then there's just, do more people now kind of see that there's opportunity?
Right.
There are other political candidates that are down ballot that don't have any security detail. Secret Service, Capitol Police, some that are further down, you know, the seniority list that may only have local police. So there's a lot of concern that there are others that may be impacted, that may be targeted.
What's your biggest fear here?
You may have others that are really, I don't want to say inspired, but maybe motivated by this attempt, but as an act of revenge or an act of retribution, or we're going to go after this person or that person that may be connected to a campaign. And then, of course, you just have election officials in general, which I think is really the undercovered story of political violence or threats against election officials. Thousands and thousands of threats against election officials all over the country since 2020, with only a handful of prosecutions. So that's a real area of concern. I know that's what the U.S. government, the security officials and election officials are huddling on right now. We've been talking about this stuff for years. Do we need to reevaluate where we're going, or the things we need to add into the security guidelines or the security guidance and make some changes?
You know, some of the polarization that we've seen has come from U.S. officials, including lawmakers and senior officials. As an example, there's been some criticism of J.D. Vance, Donald Trump's pick for vice president, tweeting that the Biden campaign's rhetoric, quote, led directly to President Trump's attempted assassination. What's your reaction when you see that?
I think the unfortunate reality is that, you know, we always try to be, particularly in the political space, the campaign space, you try to be really cute with language and try to introduce an element of nuance. I think the unfortunate reality is that, at least within DC and the political information sphere, nuance is dead. You have to be very, very precise, very, very clear, very, very clean with your messaging, because things can be misinterpreted, but they can also be spun out of context later. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing right now. And I do think that the president and his campaign, President Biden, that is, and his campaign has used some unfortunate language about putting targets on Trump. Like, that's going to immediately play into the other side. Now, can you always anticipate? No, but at the same time, I think the language of violence, at least in U.S. politics, we need to take a beat here, take a breath. And, you know, it was encouraging to see a number of officials, including Speaker of the House Johnson, talk about taking the temperature down, which seems to be kind of the phrase of the moment. And hopefully we will see more of that. You know, I kind of have my doubts, but it's a good start.
I was going to say, I mean, it sounds very nice to say bring the temperature down. Certainly, it seems we should bring the temperature down. I don't know that that's the social media world I'm living in, frankly.
No, the incentive structures do not align for that, right? We're playing into the lizard brain, the fight or flight. Like, what is it that really gets people excited and click through and click more and stay eyes on? Really, we're talking about, you know, daily average users, and how do we extend that experience in the app? That's what advertisers want to see so that they pay more. And that's frankly what users that are monetizing their time on the platform, what they're trying to do is get more people to click their stuff, look at their stuff. And so it really does not, you know, it's not set up for high quality information.
Right.
It's for high quantity information.
You also said earlier that, you know, you're watching for foreign meddling and interference campaigns. This kind of event seems like a prime opportunity, frankly, for China or Russia or some of these bad actors if they're looking to picket tensions between Democrats and Republicans. Have you seen any evidence of that so far?
There's one group in particular that I track, that we track at Sentinel Labs, called Doppelganger. It's a Russian-based group that uses fake sites, fake news sites modeled after traditional media, Washington Post, things like that, as well as some ad networks to really amplify and accelerate content. But as I was talking to my team, it seems that Doppelganger doesn't work on Sundays. So they took Sunday off while everybody was, you know, trying to figure out what was going on. But man, they came full force today pushing content around, you know, democracy under attack. Some allegations that the Biden administration or the Biden campaign, you know, really kind of fomented the attempted assassination. So those guys are right in it. You know, they've shifted and evolved their narrative and their messaging over the last several months. They have primarily been focused on, this is Doppelganger, been focused on undermining support for Ukraine and Western Europe and elsewhere. But it was only a matter of time before they set their sights on what's probably the biggest prize this year, and that's the U.S. election. There are going to be, I'm sure, all sorts of announcements this week with the RNC. There'll be other results from the investigation. But again, they don't need to wait. They can create. They use the basic grain of truth, the piece of sand in the gears that's causing friction between communities, and they will drive action entirely within that. And I do expect that, you know, that I was talking to somebody this morning that just some of the conspiracy theories we've seen already, you know, it's everything short of aliens. You know, who's responsible for this? This was a deep state action. This was intentional by the Secret Service. Oh, but maybe it was actually a further right group that was looking to further inflame tensions and drive support. And this was an expert Markman that nicked the president, and it was all intentional. So, you know, there's a lot of people that are just trying to fill the space. And this is just one of those things that I always try to adopt. It's Occam's razor, right? I mean, keep it simple. The simplest answer here, or reason, is the likeliest as well.
You know, I have to ask, you know, you were the inaugural director of CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. But for those who don't know the full background, former President Trump fired you in 2020 after that election for sort of countering his tales of a stolen election.
See, Steve, I feel like your listeners probably know me best for that rather than being director of CISA, but I appreciate you introducing me as the former CISA director.
What does it feel like to be known for that?
It's awkward, and you kind of never know when somebody says, hey, are you, and you're like, oh boy, how's this one going to go? But look, as I tweeted out the night I was fired, you know, we did it right. And I'm still proud of all the work that we did at CISA, that CISA continues to do today. And I think they're a critically important part of the nation's national security and homeland security apparatus.
Well, even in spite of some of that work, you know, since that time, this sort of narrative, this disinformation around the election being stolen has grown. Some polling shows a majority of Republicans believe it to be true. I wonder, as we look ahead to November, what does that kind of say to you?
Well, I think it's another one of those unfortunate realities that conspiracy theories take root and they find a foothold, and we can go back decades, right? I mean, we think about, you know, some of the fantastical explanations of the JFK assassination, or, you know, what Ted Cruz's father was involved. I mean, they you know, these things spin up and they die hard. But there's no real legitimate evidence to support that. And that was the most litigated, scrutinized, observed, secured election. And this is not just me talking, right? Jen Easterly's over there at CISA. Paul Nakasone, the outgoing or the former director of Cyber Command in the National Security Agency, has repeated the same sentiment. So I've got a lot of confidence about the actual, you know, technical administration of the election.
The reality is, with all of that work, Trump is on the ballot again. He may be president again. What's going through your head? Like, are you worried about that?
Well, you know, I think the simplest way to answer this is that American voters decide American elections. And if there's a majority that decides that they believe former President Trump's fit to lead, then that's what we get. And that's how elections should work in America, whether you like it or not. But we have to respect the outcomes of elections, because if we don't, then not sure how much of a democracy we have these days.
Well, listen, Chris, appreciate you making the time to be here on Politico Tech.
All right. Hey, Steve, thanks a lot.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. I am Stephen Overley. See you back here tomorrow.